Welcome to The Upshot, Multi-World Disc Golf's podcast about the latest in the disc golf world. I'm the publisher, Charlie Eisenhood. Joining me is Josh Mansfield. Josh, we are a week away from Thanksgiving. How's everything going?
Can't complain. You know, I got a story for you.
Okay.
I reached out. Remember, we said it on the show. I needed people who had course recommendations for Las Vegas and LA when I was on vacation between Christmas and New Year's. Had a couple people deliver and had some people who were willing to play some rounds with me as well. So I'm really excited about that. But I want to point out one in particular. Cody emailed me with a list of courses and said, here are a couple different courses you got to play. And the first one is, I think, like Sunset Park. He's like, he thinks this is the best course in the Vegas area. And then the second one was Wild Horse. And he says, if you're the one who kind of rails on LVC so much, you need to come play it and see how you do. And I'm like, all right, that's fair. I'll play it. I'll see how it is. I'll see how it is to play it. I'll get my butt kicked by the course.
You're going to get slaughtered. I'm sorry, but
oh, I'm going to get destroyed. I'll look at the tournament and I'll kind of estimate what I need to shoot a decent rating for me. And then I'll see if I can hit that. I'll come up with a goal of some sort before I go.
Is the course in its permanent layout for like what they play on the pro tour? I guess you'll
find
out.
I have no idea. Yeah. And at worst I'm sure I can find like an amateur event that gives me some general ratings ideas. And I know the ratings purists are going to freak out at me because that's not how you do it, but I can do it.
Courses are changing so fast. Quick little note. I actually need to write a little story about this. They are completely rebuilding Jones Gold in Emporia for Worlds.
Oh.
So the layout will be in place for DDO. In fact, Eric McCabe told me it's going to be in the ground by the end of the year. So okay. They're like putting down new tee pads. They basically, prior to this, right, they had Jones East and they had Jones West, and they sort of built a safari course that was Jones Gold. So it would be, you know, you're throwing from this tee pad to that basket on another hole to make holes longer, more challenging. But there was feedback, too easy. So after this year's DDO, so they're going back to the drawing board. They're literally just saying, forget all these original tee pads and basket positions. We're going to just rebuild a brand new course. So it's going to be in the ground for DDO, and then they're going to take the feedback from DDO and then make additional potential changes for Worlds. So, I mean, that's why I bring it up, because people are changing courses like every year now, it feels like.
Yeah.
I mean, even courses that are well-regarded, right? So Northwood, right? They built a whole new nine holes.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. I look forward to hearing how it goes. I mean,
so
if you don't have a big arm, it's just going to be a slog out there. You better do some shoulder stretches before you get going in that round.
Look, Charlie, I can throw like close to 400 feet. I think that's plenty of distance. I'm going to be fine. So it'll be good.
Shout out to the listeners who are going to hook you up with suggestions and maybe play around with you. You're going to have to hold it down for the upshot, you know. You gotta beat them.
I'm gonna do my best. Apparently, so Brian in LA, his wife is like the FA2 champion, the US champion or something. That's what he was telling me, an email. So look, I'm gonna do my best, man, but it sounds like I got some stiff competition here.
All right, well, we got a fun show. We're gonna be talking about Europe and the US and the tour, you know, who does what. You know, US-based players, they're going to play the US tour, and then they're going to get their little stop in Europe when they go over for the European Open. Your European-based players have a choice to make. The border is now officially reopened. The US border reopened to European travelers about 2-3 weeks ago. And so, you know, next year, you're not going to have to do the whole go to Croatia for 2 weeks, like we saw Kristen Tatar do once successfully and once unsuccessfully, to try to come to the US, which is great. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But first, just a little bit of news on the sponsorship front. A sleuth on Reddit, okay? IS Oregon was digging around through the Infinite Discs lineup, checking all of the discs in preparation for Black Friday, and discovered, and we'll put a picture up on YouTube, a Metal Flake Emperor with an Eric Oakley stamp on it, signature Metal Flake. What's the name of the disc in the website here? It's Infinite Disc Signature Metal Flake C-Blend Emperor, and it's got the Eric Oakley stamp. This follows some rumors and reports that Eric Oakley was spotted in Utah. And so while not official yet, Josh, I think the tea leaves are pointing pretty strongly to Eric Oakley ending up at Infinite, which is a place that a lot of people maybe expected him to land anyway.
Yeah, this is, I think, even more confirming than the time James Conrad's fan was seen outside the MVP warehouse. Everyone's like, wonder where he's going. I think that this is a good fit for Eric Oakley because I feel like players who go to Infinite Discs have the capacity to continue to maintain an independent brand in a way that is, I think, even more feasible than other players, with the exception of Paul McBeth and Paige Pierce, because Discraft rolled out the red carpet for them, right? But Drew Gibson has a very strong personal brand, and with his own new lineup of discs as well, he gets several signature series. I think Eric Oakley is going to get the same treatment. He's someone who we were very surprised about leaving Dynamic Discs just because he's been such a public face for them for so long. And I think with him going to Infinite, he gets to continue to maintain some of that brand, some of that personal identity, and can continue to throw a felon if he so desires. So,
yeah, I mean, this is in my opinion, this is the bridge between this company sponsors me for all of the discs that I throw, and I must throw only their discs, and where we will eventually end up, which is, this is the company that sponsors what I putt with. Mm-hmm. This is the company that sponsors what I use for my mid ranges. This is the company that sponsors my drivers. So, to be honest, because of sales trends, I think it would not be surprising to see really only putters and drivers getting the treatment from sponsorships. But I think we're going to get there, because I think players are going to want to have more agency when it comes to what they get to throw. Yes, mm-hmm. Players can use anyone's discs and be successful. But I think Drew Gibson's bag proves that there are still preferences across brands, the same as me and you and everybody. And it's not like one company makes all of the best discs in every slot. It's mm-hmm. not true. It is not a fact. And so I think players who are able to go to Infinite, right, this is a great opportunity for them, because they get to just optimize their bag however they want and still get paid. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, not bad at all. I think there are several – I can think of several candidates off the top of my head of companies that should pursue single disc.
Sure. We've talked
sponsorships.
About
sponsorships. Yeah.
Right. We've talked about
it. So, yeah, I definitely think that's coming.
Yeah. Like the Wizard should be somebody's – they should mm-hmm. sponsor 10 pros to only throw Wizards as putters.
Yep.
And then like revive that disc as a popular option. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it probably still is to some extent, but you don't see people talking about that.
No.
And like people would be talking about it and be like, wow, what an incredible disc. It's a great disc. It simply is. And the fact that it's not like in more pros bags means that it's left out of the conversation often. So I think we're going to get there.
Yeah.
In actually announced news, well, actually, before we get to that, I have one other thing. I've heard Matt Orem has signed a contract. It's inked for 2022 and perhaps beyond. And we will find out within the next week or two where he is headed for next season. So could be a re-signing with Prodigy. Could be a move somewhere else. Josh, you want to take a guess on where he's going to land?
I would have bet money on the DD bet until I talked myself out of it, because I was like, what if their big splash is FPO? I don't really know. So like I scared myself a little bit, but I'm going to stick with it. I think DD is going, I mean, I think there's just room for a pro on DD, and Prodigy just feels a little stuffy right now. And I think that Matteo is going to dynamic discs.
I still think the odds on most likely outcome is Prodigy return. Okay. Now, I have no idea about that relationship and how that's been going. But, I mean, Matt Orem is from the South and has been on Prodigy for a long time. And it feels like they should be saying, we want to keep you. You fit our brand great. You're from the South. And, you know, we're going to have another... We don't want to let a top 15 player get away. And so that would be my baseline expectation, that they eventually said, all right, you know, we're going to show you the money. The question is, do they have the money to show following Dickerson and Jones? And if, and what is the relationship like? Because maybe it was already in a bad spot. And like a lot of times there's just not even conversations that happen when a company and a player are like not happy, you know, either party really being unhappy. So we'll see. I think DD makes sense as like the most logical non-Prodigy landing spot. But I still think I'm going to guess that it's Prodigy with a re-up. And so we'll see. We'll find out soon enough.
You know, I will say though, the untalked about possibility, I think, is MVP.
Ooh.
They made fat stacks this year. And why not sign another great pro? Like, you got James Conrad, who won you Worlds. You get the long-haired hippie in the fedora wearing Bama
money.
Guy.
You are printing yeah. money.
Like, I would buy a disc with, like, the Bendy James, where you got, like, James' hair and stuff, or, like, his Envy's. Yeah. I would buy a disc with James Conrad and his long wavy hair with Matteo in a fedora standing next to him so fast. I can't tell you how fast. Like $30 premium or like a tour series disc, no problem. I'm getting one. That thing will be a legendary disc. So
we haven't seen that. You know, we haven't seen companies really like comboing pros on discs. I actually think it's a good idea. I think it could be a cool thing. Yeah, no, I mean, that's. I think people would buy that. I agree. And they'd have two, like, real characters if they
did. They do. They would. It's like, they would.
There's some real personality there. I think Matt Orem is going to have a big 2022. That is my take. I think we see him win an Elite Series event. You know, I think there's probably still people who are like, who's Matt Orem? And that's going to change. I think that's going to change. Finally, Nicholas Antila re-signed with Discmania on a 2-year deal. I was told that this is the by UC Marisma that this is the most guaranteed money they've ever given a European player not named Simon. And it's a mostly a royalty based deal, so sell discs, make more money, no cap. And Antila said on Instagram that basically this is an opportunity for him to really just be able to focus on disc golf and start coming over to the United States and competing. So now what's funny, literally somebody in the Facebook comments on the article about Antila, you know, re-upping for 2 years was like, who? Question mark. And I think that that really opens up for what we're going to talk about on our next segment, Europe versus the U.S., We were talking about somebody who is the European champion, one of the highest rated players in Europe, over 1030, and you know, has won the Finnish championships, was a, you know, wunderkind as a youth player, right? He's I don't think he's more than 20 years old. I think he's maybe 19. I mean, he is a young kid. This is classic Discmania mold here for who they sponsor. And you know who, right? That's how little a lot of people are paying attention to what's going on in Europe right now. If you're not playing on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, you might as well be invisible. But I mean, literally, he won the European Championship.
Right.
So, and would be competitive with the top pros that you know and love who are in the 1030s week in and week out. So, you know, we'll see, right? I mean, I think there is a question of, is there a little bit of ratings inflation going on over in Europe right now because of the, you know, the separated pools? And I guess we'll get our answer to that once people kind of come together. But this is a great disc golfer who's still getting better. And I'm excited to see him more on tour coming up in 2022.
It's a great signing, in my opinion. And, you know, I think we need to get into the schedule so I can talk a little bit more about why. I don't want to jump the gun a little bit. But as disc golf continues to flourish in Europe, and in terms of just the popularity, the courses per capita, we've talked about these numbers before, right? Just about how much more commonplace it feels that disc golf has achieved popularity in Europe as compared to the United States in some ways. I think that signing a European champion, two-time European champion, is just such a huge deal. Keeping them on your brand is especially important for a company like Discmania that is very clearly and has a European presence. It's their origins. I think it's a great signing. In the same way that you talked about Prodigy keeping Matty O, I think that Discmania would be silly to let Nicholas Antilo walk.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the European and the U.S. schedules, how they mesh, how they don't mesh, what we might see from players on that continent coming over to the U.S. or not. So stay with us. You're listening to The Upshot. The Upshot is presented by Pound Disc Golf, makers of the best bags in the sport. Pound guarantees all of their packs against defects in materials and workmanship for the lifetime of every pack. That's right, lifetime warranty. That's the kind of commitment they have to making a great disc golf bag. Go to PoundDiscGolf.com to learn more about their great options. Welcome back to The Upshot. So for those who aren't following along with what's going on over in Europe, there's actually been a lot of changes. We talked about their new streaming service that popped up at the end of the season and the associated European Pro Tour, which is going to be coming online next year. This is going to run alongside the PDGA Euro Tour. So in a lot of ways, you have kind of this comparable like NT versus DGPT thing happening over in Europe. And there's just been a real push in the last basically 2 years to kind of try to drive European disc golf into a more professional space. Payouts have been significantly lower over there, despite the fact that there are plenty of players who are, you know, very competitive with players over here in the United States. And you have countries where disc golf's an even bigger deal than here in the U.S. Like Nicholas Antila's signing made the newspaper in Finland. Okay? Like, I don't know which newspaper. But like the fact that a newspaper at all wrote about that is, I think, a notable fact. You know, when you think about how popular it feels like it is in the United States. Yes, there are more total players, but as a percentage of population, I mean, you can't beat Finland. And yet, players are still not really making that much money yet as disc golfers in Europe. So let's take a look at the schedules here. Josh, take us through what do the schedules look like for the European Pro Tour and the PDGA Euro Tour next season?
Yeah, so I'm going to bounce back and forth, and I'll highlight which tournaments are on which tours, so we can kind of see the way that these kind of mesh together. So we start the season with the Pro Forester on early March 4th through the 6th. That's on the PDGA Euro Tour. The next PDGA Euro Tour is the Scottish Masters, which is end of March, beginning of April, March 29th to April 1st. Then we jump over to the European Pro Tour with the Copenhagen Open on April they have not announced formal dates for the European Pro Tour. So we know it's sometime in the month of April. And that's the only tournament in the month of April. Then for May, we're back on the PDGA Euro Tour with the Cocodale Open, which is May 13th through the 15th. And afterwards, the Heatland Open, May 20th through the 22nd. So then we jump over to what looks like a really congested June. We know on the PDGA Euro Tour, we've got the Nine Hill Open on June 17th and the Nokia Open on June 23rd. We also have, though, the Jarva Open.
Love that.
Huge. I think this is going to be I'm going to watch that tournament.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Like that. I am so excited for that. And I would not be surprised if June, I don't know, maybe that's a little early, but I think that tournament has enough appeal that U.S. players will go over eventually. Mm.
I think the calendar is just not quite good enough, but
not yet.
Shock me if a player or two went to Europe early.
I think they need to move it, put it in July closer to the European Open so that you can get U.S. players to come to that. Anyway, so that one's also in June. And then Norway, just Norway, that's all it says. they haven't announced.
We're doing something in Norway.
They said that the venue and the date are subject to change. But right now, this is also projected in June. So that's four tournaments in the month of June between the Euro Tour and the European Pro Tour. I think that this is going to be an important month to watch to see where the European players go. Because one of those tournaments is going to be dead and just have nobody present. And I wonder which tour it's going to be on. I think it'll be really indicative of which tour has the player's favor right now.
It's going to come down to money, right? That'd be my guess. Is.
And European Pro Tour has guaranteed at least 5,000 euros in added cash as a minimum at every European Pro Tour event. So what's that, like 7,000 bucks?
Yeah, I don't know what the current exchange rate is.
I have no idea.
Let's pull it up. 5,000 euros is about 5,600 US dollars. So we're getting closer to parity between the two currencies.
When I lived in France, it was not anywhere close to that. Anyway, so 5,600 bucks guaranteed added cash, which is a big deal for Europe. It's a great starting point. And so that if that's the case, I think you should expect to see the European Pro Tour have more favor.
As a point of reference, Pro Tour events, I think, had a $20,000 added cash minimum this year. And every tournament surpassed that, many of them by a lot, especially later in the season.
I would imagine a couple of these tournaments surpassed it as well, though. I think a couple are going to step up to the plate. That's just speculation, though. Then we move over to early July with the Altigus Open.
Altigus. Good luck. I don't know.
Altigus. I love that name. I hope that's how it's pronounced. Someone will correct me. Anyway, that's early July, July 1st through the 3rd. And then you have the PCS Sula Open, which is July 13th through the 16th. And this is another month that I think is really congested because you have the PCS Sula Open. And then the weekend after, you have the European Open in Nokia at the Beast on July 21st through the 24th. But the European Pro Tour has also said that the Tini Open in Finland and the Estonian Open in Estonia are both going to happen in July as well.
This one I actually know how to pronounce. It's Tuni. I don't know Tuni. If I'm getting it exactly thank you. Right, but it's more of a U right. sound.
Okay, Tuni Open. That's five events in the month of July. Yeah. And I wonder – go ahead.
I was going to say the PCS Sula Open is going to earn Pro Tour points, disc golf Pro Tour points. So I think there's a pretty good chance pros from the U.S. are going to play that. That's probably going to bring – it's also the weekend before. It fits into the schedule and the map really well. I think that's going to be well attended. I don't know what that's going to mean for those other tournaments. Tuni has a long reputation for being one of the sort of most professional, highest paying tournaments in Europe, though. So – perhaps you're going to see some bouncing back and forth, but it's literally impossible to go to all of them because if they all happen in July, because there's not enough weekends.
Yeah. And it's noteworthy that on the European Pro Tour, they have asterisks next to the two tournaments where dates are still under consideration. These two are not like these seem pretty set in stone. So July is going to be a mess over there. And I think it's really going to be important to watch.
But I mean, to be fair, that's the swing. That's the European swing. We're going to see U.S. players coming over, probably playing in those events. And so the congestion makes sense because that's the stretch of the tour where you're going to have, for the only time in the year, U.S. players coming across the Atlantic to play over there for obviously getting ready for European Open. So, you know, meanwhile, over in the States, there's the U.S. Women's Championship is July 1st through 3rd in Madison, Wisconsin. So that's a major. Obviously, the FPO side will be playing that. Then you have Idlewild July 8th through 10th. I'm going to be curious to see what happens with Idlewild because I feel like a lot of players might choose to skip that just based on the calendar, get over to Europe, enjoy some time vacationing, play a couple of the European events before the European Open. We'll see, but it's definitely a crowded calendar for July just across the board because right after European Open is D-Glow, July 29th. I think that both of those events, Idlewild and D-Glow, are probably going to have reduced field sizes this year and you know maybe quality because some players are going to be over in Europe.
And that's the norm, if I remember right. Yeah. I mean, before COVID,
that's what would happen.
The Great Lakes Open wasn't nearly as well attended. So I am curious to know if the Tunney Open is going to challenge maybe like the PCS Sula Open or go the weekend after the European Open to try and attract some more U.S. players to stay and play that one.
That would make sense.
Given just its reputation, as you talked about. So interesting to see. And it is in Finland as well. So, I mean, those three tournaments, I imagine, are going to be – European Open, obviously, no one's going to try and mess with that. But PCS Sula versus Tunney, I'm interested to see how they kind of conflict. The Turku Open then moves in August on the European Pro Tour. Date is subject to change. Belgian Open is September 23rd. And then the European Pro Tour All-Stars is in the...
Fuengirola Open.
Thanks.
You got it.
I didn't stand a chance. And then that tournament is happening in Spain in November. And remember, the European Pro Tour said they were going to try and attract some U.S. players to come to that event as well. So I don't know what the qualification process is going to look like or how they're going to do invites. But that one is considered to be kind of an exciting event.
All right. Quickly, I have a couple takes for you. And then we can talk a little bit more about, you know, what players might do. Obviously, the bulk of the tournaments in Europe are in June and July. I mean, after the European Open, things calm down quite a bit. There's one event scheduled in August, one event scheduled in September, nothing in October, and then an event scheduled in November. So part of that is just the, I think conditions in Europe, right, are really the best, you know, in Northern Europe, in the Nordic countries. You know, June and July, that's when it's nice. You know, once you start to get towards October, it gets pretty cold. So I think that's part of it. Obviously, you have the fact that the U.S. players are coming over for the European Open and the major. And so you want to build in tournaments around that. Tunney Open, by the way, says they're going to have over 1,000 spots available in that tournament this year for 2022. So, I mean, they are trying to do it big. They still don't have a date. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the weekend before PCS Sula. That would make sense, right? You don't want to go on top of that one. So, we'll see what happens. So I think what we'll see, a lot of European players will play in Europe pretty much all in July and also maybe a lot of June. We will see some players, top level players, come over to the U.S. early in the season and play in the U.S. in, you know, March, April, May. And then we will also see players coming over after European Open and maybe playing the entire back half of the season in the United States, because that would make a lot of sense. Why bother going over and, you know, staying in Europe? And I mean, it depends on when the Turku Open is in August, but you could come over and play Ledgestone, Des Moines, obviously Worlds. You know, that's going to be on everybody's plans to come over for that. So once you're here, you might as well play some of those other events, right? So you go to Ledgestone, Des Moines, then you have Worlds, and then you have GMC, MVP, and on. So
but
the thing is, especially on the women's side, I think there are some players, there are definitely players, Evelina, Hannah, Kristen, who can come over early in the season, bank points playing at the early Pro Tour events, come back, bank points then, and make the Tour Championship. And I think that it's, you don't have to play every single event in order to make the Tour Championship if you're playing at a high level when you come over and you play and you're finishing in the top five. So I think that that's probably what we'll see. I think it's going to be a harder lift for MPO players to not play at least the minimum number of point scoring events. So we'll see how that shakes out. It may force people to make choices about when and where they come and play in the U.S. if they're trying to make the Pro Tour Championship.
Well, the other thing that correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought GMC and MVP are going to be their playoff events.
They are. That's correct.
So don't they have, excuse me, limited field entries?
Yes. So, I mean, they haven't announced official numbers yet, but 100 MPO and I think 60 FPO, if I remember correctly off the top of my head. I could just pull this up.
Okay. And do you know is it based on points
based or
is it
based on current points?
Current points.
So instead of the cutoff of the Tour Championship, which was this year, it was top 32 MPO, top 16 FPO, which they're planning, I think, to expand to 40 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the cutoff at 40, cutoff's going to be at 100. So look, any top 10-30 rated player who plays five or six tournaments will be in a position to go to those events. Because, you know, you're not going to be below 100, right?
Right.
There's still not that many elite touring pros that you're not going to be able to be in the top 100. So I think, and the other thing is that those tournaments, GMC and MVP, you know, MVP cuts the number down a little bit more, I think to 80 MPO.
Mm-hmm.
Those are going to score more points as well towards the Tour Championship. So people who are in that, you know, let's say 40 to 60 range might have a chance to move up by playing well there. So it's going to be an interesting decision for players over in Europe about what they want to try to do.
Well, and here's the other note that I want to make about that is in the past, it was a very real possibility to just come for, like you said, the back half of the season, right? They could come looking at the schedule and hit Ledgestone, Des Moines, Worlds, GMC, MVP, USDGC, and then if they made Tour Championship, great. If they didn't, oh well, they had a great stretch of tour, right? If they don't play any of the early events, like you were talking about, though, I don't think they would make GMC, would they? If you only play 2-3 events, do you think that's enough?
Probably not.
For like Nicolas Antila, for example? So those pros then have to make the decision, because if they don't make the cut, and maybe they don't make the cut for GMC but not MVP, there is a gap of a month between Worlds and USDGC. So if you want to come for
both
of them,
you have to qualify for, by the way.
True, you do have to qualify for that. I think that some of these European events will probably be qualifiers.
They for sure are, for sure.
So that I don't think qualification will be too big of an issue. But I think that if a player doesn't go to early tournaments, it's a weird, awkward back end of the tour for them now to just stay for Ledgestone on and then just not worry about the Tour Championships if they don't make it. So I think this leads to the discussion that I wanted to have. Which MPO and FPO pros do you think are going to commit to that kind of schedule and ensuring that they can get into the playoffs and hopefully the Tour Championships? And which pros do you think are going to just reap the benefits of what is now a pretty comprehensive European tour? It has the fair number of events that you can play. I would say you probably could play about 10 of them, just speculating, not knowing exact dates. So
probably more than that. I mean, I think you could probably play, like, if you were being aggressive, you could play 12 to 15.
12? Well, depending on how many overlaps we have. Because remember, like, July and June were literally impossible to attend them all.
Well, let me think 12... about this. There actually are 5 weekends in July.
Oh, my goodness.
Despite what I said before. And we know there's an event the weekend of the 2nd and 3rd, the weekend of the 13th and the 16th and 17th, and then European Open is the 23rd and 24th weekend. So you still have 2 other weekends there, and there's 2 events on the calendar for the Pro Tour, so do the math.
All right. Here's something I want to say real fast, though. The European Pro Tour events were not on the PDGA's A-tier list. Is that correct?
I don't
remember. I went back and checked, and I didn't see them. I mean, they don't have dates selected, so they can't be.
I guess they can't be.
Is that odd to you?
Not necessarily.
No?
Like, what's the benefit of being an A-tier on the PGA schedule? Like, if you're trying to build your own tour, you don't want to have to necessarily go through all of the headache of trying to get A-tier status with the PGA. And like, clearly there is like a little bit of friction, right? There has to be between the Pro Tour and the Euro Tour. And I think we're going to see similar like conflict there, like we saw a little bit with NT and DGPT until now it's merged.
Sure.
But, you know, just as the PDGA was skeptical early on that the Pro Tour could be successful and sustainable, I think you have to feel the same way about the European Pro Tour. It hasn't even happened yet. They don't even have dates yet. Yeah. All right, like let's wait and see how things go this year.
So back on the players then. I think the two players, in my opinion, that are locks of who should come over for early season and late season are on MPO side, Vino Makkala and Nicholas Anttila.
Sounds about right. I mean, those are the guys.
Right. I imagine Silva Lott will probably come with Kristen Tatar. But that's pure speculation.
I mean, he does what he did this year. Yeah. It would make sense.
And having a, you know, someone to travel with does reduce costs, so you don't have to play as well or worry about money nearly as much. And then you got Seppo Paju, who probably will do it as well. But in my opinion, those are the big names that I expect to come over. Is there anyone I'm forgetting on the MPO side?
Those are for sure the first two names that I would have thought of.
Okay.
Vino is currently ranked 16th. Anttila is 24th. Lauri Lehtinen is 25th. So perhaps you would consider him. Let's see what he did this year. He won Tampere and he won Heinola, both Prodigy Disc Pro Tour events. Good player.
Yeah, he was in second on the Prodigy Pro Tour.
So, I mean, you know, I don't know the status. He's currently 1028 rated. He would be a good candidate as well. It's going to be those guys who are at the absolute top of Europe who feel like, hey, I could go over and compete.
What I will say about Lauri Lehtinen, he doesn't have quite the name recognition, I think, of Vino Makkala and Nicholas Anttila. What's Nicholas Anttila's rating? Do you remember?
It's in the low 1030s. I'll tell you exactly what it is right now.
Okay.
He is 1032 rated.
Okay. And maybe 1028 to 1032 isn't that big of a difference. I think Lauri Lehtinen, though, is a prime candidate to be the guy who wins everything in Europe. You have Vino Makkala, Nicholas Anttila, Seppo Paju who leave, come over to the U.S., and for him to stay and win, you know, 6-7 events and just destroy the European Pro Tour and the Euro Tour, I think could really help establish a brand image for him and a good name over in Europe to the point that we start to notice him a little bit more over here in the United States. And I think he benefits now a lot from having this extensive European tour, whereas some of these other top players we've talked about are probably going to continue to come to the United States. So I think Lauri Lehtinen is one of the prime MPO candidates here. Because let's be real, at 1028, I don't think that does much for him to come to the U.S.
Well, that's the challenge for all these guys.
Right.
None of them are so dominant that they're winning every tournament they enter. Like, if Paul McBeth went over to Europe, how many of these events would he win? 75%?
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably not going to win every single one of them, but like, he's going to be dominating in a way that we haven't really seen any individual player dominate. Lehtinen has wins. Makkala has wins. Anttila has wins. They're not so far out in front of each other that it's like, oh, I'm a lock. Like, I'm 1045 rated. I got to get over to the U.S. and start making bank. Like, they're good, but they're going to be players who are fighting for top 10 spots probably on, you know, at big pro tour events. And so it really just may come down to money. Obviously, you can raise your profile and image quite a bit by coming over to the U.S. and playing well, getting on the lead card. You know, people are not paying attention right now to what's going on in Europe all that much. But on the other hand, payouts are rising in Europe. You have an opportunity to be the number one player in Europe. If you go to the U.S. too much and you're not playing in Europe at all, do you lose out on potentially becoming the guy in Europe when, you know, let somebody else be that person while you're finishing 20th at Pro Tour events? Like, maybe you make more money total in payout, but I don't know. It's a balancing act, I think.
For sure. I think Makula and Antila are good enough that they could get a top 10 finish.
I definitely think so.
And make some lead cards.
I definitely think so.
And so for them, I think it's worthwhile to come get that brand and the exposure. And payouts are so good in the U.S. right now. I bet you a 10th place finish is probably better than most payouts, probably even winning some of these tournaments over in Europe. Cost of travel, though, is going to be less. So I really think, like I talked about, Lori Ladin, I don't see him finishing top 10 regularly or if at all. So I think him staying in Europe and establishing his portfolio better there is he's just that prime candidate.
So we obviously know that the top three European women are going to come over and play some point. They usually come early in the season and then later on, a lot of times they're at U.S. Women's. They can play the majors. And so, you know, we'll see what the decision is there. But, you know, they're clearly all competitive enough to literally win tournaments here. And so what about players beyond those, the big three? Are you going to see anybody else coming over to the U.S. for an extended period of time?
The only candidate I see as being a possibility would be Heidi Lane. I think she had a pretty competitive season this year. I mean, she, if you look at the Prodigy Pro Tour standings on UDisc, it goes Evelina wins four tournaments in a row, and then Heidi Lane takes the fifth one, and that's it. Like, there's your winners for the season. And there are, of course, other events not on the Prodigy Pro Tour that there were wins, but Heidi Lane is good, and she has the potential to play well. I cannot imagine, though, that outside of the big three, she is getting that much money from her sponsor and from payouts. I cannot imagine there's that much cash for her. I think Heidi Lane is a prime candidate, like we talked about, on the MPO side with Lori Lettinen, to really benefit from an expanded European tour. And if the three powerhouses leave, she could become the next FPO name that you know from Europe and work to getting a big contract and then establishing herself maybe in the future as coming over to the US to increase that. But I think she is the one who benefits the most from this expanded European schedule.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of tournaments without where doubt. She finished third behind two of the big three and finished way ahead of everybody else. So it's like there's the big three and then there's her and then there's everybody else. So if those big three are gone, I think you're totally right. You're taking down first place paychecks and you're establishing yourself as like the player in Europe for FPO who's in Europe.
Right.
I 100% think that makes sense. And, you know, if I was in her shoes, I would probably choose that route. And I'd be like, thank God, I get to go and just like start winning a bunch. And, you know, it helps. It helps to be winning.
Well, and just when you look at like travel time in Europe, you got to remember, I mean, when I lived in France, like the country of France is smaller than the state of Texas. Right. Like travel time is significantly less. You can fly to other European countries for less than $100 sometimes, depending on the season and the year. So it's affordable to travel around Europe. And so if she is getting now first place payouts on guaranteed minimum cash added cash at these tournaments, I think she really could begin to establish herself as a dominant FPO player, get the reps in, and I think she has the potential to eventually come to the U.S. and be successful. I think she needs to do this year of just winning everything in Europe before she does, though. So
it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm super excited to see some more European players coming over to the U.S., making a name for themselves over here. And I'm excited to see the U.S. players heading over to Europe for that swing in July. It should be a lot of fun. So let us know your thoughts. I know we have some European listeners. What do you think about the whole situation? Let us know. Upshot at UltiWorld.com. What's the vibe on the ground in Europe as it relates to these two tours and how things are progressing over there? It's been very locked down in Europe, so I'm super excited for all of them, the players there, to be able to start just touring again, period. You know, going outside of their home country, let alone the U.S. So should be a much brighter 2022 for the European side of disc golf. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back with you on Tuesday of next week. Reminder, please send in your what you're thankful for. Record it into your phone, 30 seconds, whatever you got, and then just hit the share button. Send it over to upshot@ultiworld.com. We're compiling listener what they're thankful for and putting them into our show for Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. We'll talk to you next week.
One more thing, Charlie.
Okay.
We got to do our picks.
Ooh.
We're not doing it. We're kind of doing over under, kind of doing a picks. And you might be asking, well, what are you picking on? There's no tournaments upcoming. There's not. But do you know what there is on Thanksgiving Day? There's football, baby. Charlie, we got some lines, right?
We do. We certainly do. We've got three Thanksgiving Day games. And it to be fair, this is not an over under. We could do over-under on the point totals, but that's boring and not as fun as making actual spread picks. So we're going to make spread picks, and we're just deviating this week from our over-under, and we're just going to do picks against the spread. So let's take them one at a time. First up, the Chicago Bears are three-point favorites against the Detroit Lions. So Bears minus -3. Josh, who you taking?
I feel like this is a terrible choice, but I'm going to take the Lions to beat the spread. They're coming off the tie. I think they can get another one if they try really hard. So, yeah, I think the Lions will beat the spread on the Bears. Look, if there's one team that knows how to lose against bad teams, it's the Bears.
I know. It's like two not very good teams playing each other. But the Detroit is so snake bit. This is the most snake bit franchise on the planet. Give me the Bears to cover the spread. I don't like having to lay the full field goal, but I think if it was 3.5, I'd probably take the Lions. But at 3, I'll take the Bears. Tight line. And that should be, I'm not sure I'm even going to watch that game, but.
Oh, I'm not. No way. Zero chance.
Next up, Cowboys, 7-point favorites, touchdown favorites against the Las Vegas Raiders. Cowboys have looked pretty good, but this feels like a little too high of a line for me. I'm going to take the Raiders plus 7. The Raiders are a pretty good football team, and this feels just like the kind of game that's going to be gritty in the trenches, short rest, and I think the Raiders can keep it closer than 7.
Okay. I think, because Cowboys are playing, are Cowboys playing Sunday? Are they? I thought they were playing Thursday.
This tomorrow, coming week.
Playing today.
About that.
So I think Cowboys get a full week of rest. I was going to take the Cowboys to cover the spread anyway. I think that the Cowboys are an offensive powerhouse, and the Raiders got embarrassed by the Chiefs. I think they're going to get embarrassed by the Cowboys.
Interesting. I mean, I think the Chiefs just finally had a legitimate game. I mean, they have not been very Chiefs-like to this point, but it's true.
No, they haven't.
The Raiders have slumped a little bit. I mean, they just lost to the Giants 2 weeks ago. But, football's crazy like that.
It is.
So, all right, there you go. We're on separate sides again. And then the final game is Bills, 4-point favorites against the Saints. Who you got, Josh?
I think this is the most interesting game.
Oh, easily.
Without a doubt. It's also, in my opinion, I love the line. I think the line is excellent on this one. In a tribute to a dear friend of mine who I once got to watch disc golf, and she said she would never watch it again. So I don't know why I'm doing this for her. Diehard Saints fans, Sean Payton shows up when he has to play the best teams. I think that the Saints defense is good enough that they're going to keep it close, and I'm picking the Saints to cover the spread.
Look, so the Saints have lost their last two games, both by 2 points, to the Falcons and the Titans. Now, the Titans are really good.
They are.
The Saints
beat, game before that, they beat Saints the Bucks, beat though,
the
Bucks. Didn't they?
The Saints beat the Bucks the game before that. This line opened a little higher. I think it was 4.5 to the Bills, and it's come down to 4. I'm going to follow the steam on this one, and I'm going to take the Saints as well. I think that, you know, really the Bills should probably only be a 3-point favorite in this one. The Saints have been keeping it close, even in their losses, and they've also got a lot of big wins on the ledger. Mm-hmm. Now, the Bills are a really good team, but they've been wildly inconsistent. And so, you know, I think it's going to be a fun one. This is definitely the one that everyone's got circled. You don't normally get a game this good on Thanksgiving. A lot of times it's like weird, just like Cowboys-Lions games.
Right. You sleep through it. Yeah. That's, you take you your post-Thanksgiving.
You're kind of just like woozy. All right. So
this will be a game I watch.
Those are our picks against the spread. And so we'll score them next time. Probably a week after Thanksgiving, obviously. All right, there it is. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for being with us. Please check out our subscriber bonus segment. Comes out every Wednesday. You can become a subscriber for less than $4 a month at discgolf.ultiworld.com/subscribe. This week we talked about manufacturers' teams and where the holes are, where maybe manufacturers want to plug holes. It's a great segment, so we hope you'll subscribe and check it out. For Josh Mansfield, I'm Charlie Eisenhood saying so long, and we'll talk to you next week right here on The Upshot.